Welcome back to this episode of the Strong Kind Podcast. This episode is with Jim Hallinan. Jim is a teacher. He's a coach. He's actually helping people make behavioral and lifestyle changes that will actually influence them personally and in their fitness life. Jimmy is on Instagram at Jimmy Nutrition. So he does a lot of nutrition and health coaching. We had a great conversation. This was honestly a lot of fun. I hope you really find the value in it. We honestly just spitballed about life, lifting, training, and being a human being. It was awesome. Really appreciate Jimmy coming on, and check it out and let me know what you think. Appreciate you being here. Peace. This is usually the best stuff is when it's just like we're starting off with a guy selling solar panels.
Yeah, I'm trying to come out to the garage where my office is, and a guy is walking up as I'm walking out my front door to get into the garage, trying to sell me solar panels, which I've considered. My only bill is electric, literally the only bill I have. And I have good roof. I have good roof for it. You know, it's long, lot of roof.
I want to see, I don't know. I've thought about this too, because we have like a west facing, our garage and our roof are westwardly facing. So like okay. You get a lot of exposure near the end of the day. I need to think about it, man. It's like, I think it's a big upfront investment, right? But
well, there's two options. All right. So this is what I have to educate myself a little bit on.
Yeah.
You can get it like this guy. It's zero. You're not putting any money out of pocket. They install it. Okay. Where they get paid is they're getting a decent percentage of the savings from the electric company.
Okay.
So somebody might tell you, I'm paying $30 a month. I used to pay $400. And because they bought the panels.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so they put 30 to 50 grand up, but otherwise, I mean, I could be saving 50 a month. I have no idea, but apparently they give you a number that they guarantee. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't it's know. Such but a, I consider like, it.
Dude, this is a good place to start because I just have, this has just been going through my mind over and over again. It's like, I want to cover a lot of ground with you because you just seem like an interesting cat, which I think is cool. But,
you too.
Like, you feel like we're just in the age of, I mean, I think maybe everything has always been hype, where like we create these grandiose expectations about what things are going to be, and then like nothing ever lives up to them. Like, yeah. I think about that like with like my coaching service all the time. And it's like, I have clients that really enjoy working with me and have stayed with me for a long time, but it's like,
yeah.
So I'm going to get in, we're going to lift weights, and we're going to work on habits. And I'm going to hopefully get out of pain. Oh, like this all sounds super great. The outcomes are awesome. Right. But then it's like you get in and it's like, oh, I have to do work. Like, and it's going to take a long time.
Or it's like I'll have people, cause I'm totally virtual. Are you all virtual? You have some in person, right?
I have some in person. Yeah. Okay. It's not like a big part of my business, but I have a few like personal training-esque clients, and I do a small group of women on Wednesday mornings that is actually really awesome because like none of them have egos. Like they just come in and like it's almost like you got to push them a little bit, but like so but that's not a big piece of my business. It's like it's nice. I like that. Being completely virtual, I do like in-person coaching, right?
Yes.
But you know, for people to pay for that, like, because you kind of got to demand a little bit of a good hourly wage if you want to do it and not burn out, right?
Yeah.
So it's just, it hasn't been a major piece, and I've kind of held that boundary, and it's worked out. So yeah,
because there could be that perspective online. It's like they're signing up and they're like, this is it. I'm like, did you think I was going to text you every day and ask it how lunch was, you know? So there's, I'm available, and I'm constantly encouraging people to reach out. It's like you join a gym, you have to go to the gym. The gym doesn't come.
Oh no, you cut out.
Contact you nonstop to make sure. Am I back?
You're back. It was short.
Okay. You know, so kind of reminding them like this is, you have to initiate most of the stuff. And I initiate, but yeah, I mean, you check in, you see how things are going, you have conversations, because I think you and me are on the same page with the lifestyle and the mindset aspect. And it's not, results are obviously important, but the results that I get excited about, that the impression I get, that you get excited about, is that perspective shift. You know, it's the way that they're handling situations or bouncing back from, you know, when they let themselves down. And
yeah.
They start just going, this is a decision I made and I'm moving on, not beating themselves up. So sometimes, you know, you have to remind them of the growth. Those are just what I was posting in my stories yesterday, that there's growth that's not measurable unless you pay attention to it.
Yeah. You know? Well, so. Okay. So let's just rein it in with, like, you're a teacher, right?
Yeah.
You've been a teacher for a long period of time.
Yeah, right? Almost 25 years, man.
And it sounds like you didn't necessarily intend to get into teaching when you were like 25 years old, correct? You didn't.
No, I've been teaching since I was 22 years old.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. My degree is in education. When I was in college, I was a personal trainer. I became the assistant manager of the training department at LA
That's
Fitness.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But when I graduated, I ended up moving across the country. I get a call from back here in Jersey, you know, saying, hey, it would be worth flying home for the interview if you're interested in moving back. So I knew I had the job pretty much over the phone.
Gotcha.
So I took that job. So I've been teaching since I was 22. I always wanted to be a teacher. I didn't initially think I'd be a phys ed teacher. I just didn't want to study history for 4 years. I would have liked to have taught it, I think, to make it interesting. I had a couple good history teachers. But I just wanted to teach. I like the concept, you know, I worked with high school kids when I was in college in like a youth group setting, and I just liked working with them and I wanted to teach. And, so I've been teaching fresh out of college.
So I was a history major in undergrad. I was a history and political science major.
The whole time?
Yeah. I started open semester. Well, cause I started open. I started with no major and, I think it was the problem was, like, if you go and you don't have a major, it's like, what course of study do I like even take here? And also it's like, I look back and it's like, I should have just gone to community college for like 2 years and just like worked and just taken in and enjoyed whatever. But like, that's kind of it wasn't at the time. And maybe it's still not like the thing to do if you're like trying to get out of your hometown type of thing.
Plus, if you're a good high school student, I've seen this struggle big time with high school students. If you're a good student and you do well, there's a STARS program here. You could go to the community college for free. And it's a good community college.
Yeah.
But the pride of, like, I worked hard. Now I'm going to school with kids who sucked as a student. And I'm with the dumb kids. Like, this ego pride thing takes over. And I'm like, yeah, now, I mean, schools are 50 grand a year.
Dude.
I mean, my college was 10 grand, 11 grand, room and board, everything. Now that same school is like 40 grand.
Yeah.
Like, you're saving 80 grand potentially, you know? So don't let you'll be able to move out on your own by doing this versus living home for the next 15 years with your $200,000 in debt.
Yeah.
College
has become a luxury good and an ego good, right? And like everybody, you know, and I'm not saying that college isn't this, like, I just think what I think about more and more, and I can't speak on this, you can probably speak on it better, is like, kids don't know what the frick they're doing, right? Yeah. And so it's like,
more so now.
Yeah, because there's almost too many options, right? It almost gives you this like sense of, if I can't like do the best thing in the world, then I'm a failure, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, most of life is pretty boring. And you should just find something that you enjoy enough that you will navigate the waves of it. And then find other ways to be a human being that is well-rounded and takes care of themselves, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if things swing. I mean, I think it was, you're expected to go to college. A lot of kids are picking programs that are focused on how much money can I make? And then a lot of them end up unhappy, I think, in that career. Now there's so much apathy.
Yeah.
They just have no interest in anything. I mean, the volume of high school kids, like, I don't know. I guess I'll do business. And I'm like, why are you doing business? I'm like, well, I want to own my own business one day. I'm like, you know, you don't have to go to college to own your own business. And they're like, yeah, but it'll help. I'm like, it won't. I go, 90% of people I know who own their own business didn't go to college.
Yeah. And they're probably better off for it, because you make it. Thinking that business is anything other, and I'm not a business expert. I have lasted for a few years. I've also like taken counsel from people I trust. I also, like, my parents My parents made us get jobs when we were four. I mean, my parents started a lawn mowing business so that we could like basically mow lawns and stuff. So I at least saw that, like, okay. And my oldest brother is an entrepreneur, and I also saw the stress that he endured to make it, right? Yeah. But like, most of this shit is figuring out like a simple service that you believe in and you are willing to figure out how to make it work, right? Yeah. And
yeah,
where I think people go wrong, like say in our line of work with like, I want to be a coach. Okay, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to make this a super elaborate system. This is kind of tying back. I'm going to make this super elaborate system that nobody understands. And then I'm going to try to like sell it to people. It's like, nobody gets that. Yeah. Nobody cares, right? They care about losing weight. They care about getting stronger. They care about getting out of pain. Those are the outcomes you need to orient around, right? But yeah, I think like, dude, it's just, have you ever read anything by Cal Newport, like So Good They Can't Ignore You, or like So Good They Can't Ignore You is a really good, like, people think that if they find what they're passionate about, life will be easy, right? Well, you don't know. You don't know until you try a bunch of shit.
Yeah, and I've said that, like, people, even what's my purpose in life?
Yeah.
Or whatever it might be. And I'm a firm believer in you create your purpose. You create your passion. I mean, you could not like your job and you can decide to become passionate about it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying everybody should be doing that. Some people truly hate their job and they can't get to that place, but you can start to view that job differently and be like, how can I become awesome at this job?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in education, it's hard because you're not rewarded for being awesome. You get paid the same as the awful people, the horrible people or the awesome people. It's like, so why even bother? But if you're not liking your job, then maybe just the perspective shift of how can I really get great at this? And how can I bring something different to the table than what I've been bringing and become passionate about? So yeah, I think a lot of people are searching for things instead of just simply uncovering what's already there.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So we have a newborn, and I wanted to get into fatherhood a little bit with you because I think that's an important part of your perspective. But like, it's 9 o'clock at night last night, and our upstairs is where the baby is, and alongside of our room, not in our room, and it's like dry. We don't have any distilled water for the humidifier, and I love my wife, but my wife's like, we need to get distilled water. I'm like, so we have a Walmart 5 minutes down the road. Going to Walmart at 9 o'clock at night is just like, what is going on, right?
Yeah.
But I'm like, so, you know, you go there and I always have these moments of like, am I too proud to, would I be too proud to like go get a job at Burger King? Or would I be too proud if I like had to go get a job at Walmart? How could I handle that situation? And I haven't had to do that, right? So I don't actually know, but this is just the thought experiment. But like, I have this belief, and I don't know, like your environment can really shape you, but I also have to kind of believe that humans are the only animal that can actually shape their environment too, based on their actions and what they do and how they respond. And that's really hard, but I'm like, if you worked at Walmart and you did a really good job and you took like some ownership in like what you did, could you be happy and like rise through the ranks, right? And part of me says like, as a 36-year-old white man from Iowa, probably not. I would probably just be so judgmental of myself and that what other people thought of me that I probably couldn't. But, you know, if I was an immigrant from some country where, hey, me making some money in the United States and you know, working was good.
Just having the opportunity is huge. Oh, my gosh, I got a job.
Yeah.
In this country I just came to. What a perspective. And then we're like, ugh, I'm better than that.
Yeah. It's wild, right? And I don't know. I mean, like, there are people at that Walmart who they're just literally sitting around, like, not doing jack squat, right? Yeah. And it's like, okay. But it's, I think you got to humble yourself to that type of stuff on a regular basis and realize, like, oh, it could all go to shit. And you might have to go do that thing, right?
Yeah. That was stuff my dad always talked about growing up. I mean, we would pull up to the house. He was super poor growing up, shared a bed with his two brothers. Like, they just had one room, one bed. They shared that. His sister had basically a walk-in closet size bedroom. It was just this narrow, like a bed, and then like a little bit of an alleyway that you could get through past the bed. Grew up with nothing. And so then when we were growing up and he gets this first house that's not a townhome with us, he would pull up to the house and he's like, all the time. And I would roll my eyes. Like, can you believe we live here? Can you believe it could all be gone in a minute? It could all be gone in a minute. You know, always said that. And he would even talk about exactly what you just said about you might have to get a job. Like, I'm never too good to take any job. Anything I need to do to, like, he always would say that. And I believe him. It was not a line at all. Because he grew up just with nothing, you know, if he lost it all, if he lost his job. But that, I think, gave him a fire that he worked hard, and he ended up retiring as one of the vice presidents of Starbucks. So it was just a wild life, but we didn't have much growing up. He started to do really well, like, after we were out of college. And we never knew that he struggled. We never knew about the times where he was like, oh my God, we bought this house and now I just got this, like, demotion type thing because of certain cuts, and we never knew. And then he, you know, went from there. But
the never knowing that about your parents, like, struggle, like, I love my parents, you know, looking back, because it's like, oh shit, that behavior was that, like, yeah. Like, I love my mom. My mom is somebody, though, that, like, has had, like, chronic pain off and on, and for different, and it's like, so much of it is, like, emotional and psychological stress that manifests in her body, right?
100%.
And
God, yeah.
And then, like, my dad, like, I love my dad too, but my dad went from being, like, a 30-year-old active man to working a desk job at a bank that was, like, you know, my dad evidently repoed cars for a little while. Like, I didn't know this until, like, a few years ago. He's like, no, we live in Iowa. He's like, I had to go to Los Angeles every quarter and, like, repo cars. Like, and I'm like, holy shit, imagine how stressful that would be. Yeah. Right. And then it, like, a lot of it makes sense. Your body starts to feel crappy because you're stressed out. You start eating and drinking. And, like, my dad's a good guy, but, like, food is his coping mechanism. And yeah. Food is kind of my coping mechanism too. Right. So, dude, but, like, I never, as a kid, still, I was happy and I was pretty well taken care of. Right. And, yeah, so I don't know what your thoughts are on that. Let's talk about, like, fatherhood a little bit, because I am a dad. And how
I have all the answers. I have all the answers. No. So just ask. I have all of them.
What has been, like, being a dad done for you from a, like, maybe, like, yeah, like, does it put things into perspective? So this is one thing I will say. I will say that life was good, but before, you know, but this has almost given us, like, a new breath of, hey, we have something else in our life to take care of. And, like, and me and my wife have a little bit more of a, like, a, like, let's be a team. And I'm really trying to maintain that and cultivate that and continue that. Right. Relationships are hard. Right. But, like, and kids are a hard element of that thing. But, like, I feel like my wife was joking the other day. She's like, cause you were so on the spot for, like, 3 weeks. And then you kind of fell back into, like, you know, your little turdly ways in a few ways. I'm like, all right, I got to nip that in the bud. Right. But, like, there is this certain amount of just go and take care of the kid. Right. And then when you have a little time to take care of yourself, like, go get your shit done. Right.
Yeah.
What's your perspective on that?
It's been a wild ride in a lot of ways, and I've had a very interesting year that you might be surprised, but I don't think we've talked about this at all.
I know you got divorced.
Divorce, okay.
Which I'm very sorry to hear, but also like, I recognize that that is part of a lot of people's journeys, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting, and, like, all that stuff kind of connects with what you're saying, like, how hard it is. You know, marriage is hard, being a parent with somebody, parenting together. Always trying to maintain a team effort and all of that. So I would just encourage you to, as that stuff gets tough, to love on her as much as you can, if you don't necessarily want to end up in a situation like me. We just got to a point where we were a great team, but we were two different parts of the team. We both had full-time jobs. I had multiple other jobs, businesses, things like that. So I was always busy. So the first handful of years, which I wasn't overly worried about, because I'm like, these aren't years that he's going to remember that I was working a lot, kind of a thing. That bled into a little bit more later on, longer than I thought. And I had a weird, his birth was, like, traumatic. And I only had one friend ever say they had the similar experience to me, because everybody says when they see that their kid at first, they're like, they fell in love. Like, now I know what true love is, and they fell in love with my kid.
I
kind of
think
right
those
away.
People are kind of bullshitters, but
I think to a degree, yeah. And
our baby came out looking like an alien. He's beautiful. He's looking like an alien, covered in stuff, and I was like, what the hell's going on? But it was great, and I loved him. Like, I'm like, this is amazing. But I also was like, well, okay, like, holy shit.
Yeah. Well, I share this story when I was teaching seniors in health. When I talk about the labor process and all that. And I have gotten some very judgmental looks from some students, typically female, when I tell them this. But we went in, she was in labor for like 20 hours. She wasn't dilating. They're giving her drugs for it, all that stuff. And they're like, we're going to have to do a C-section if you want this thing out. And it was like 3 days late. So she's like, get the baby out, whatever. Do the C-section. She had already gotten like the epidural. Gets to a point where they can't give her any more, and she can feel the C-section. And she does not respond well to any pain meds. Like, if she took a Percocet, she'd be very nauseous. She can feel the C-section happening. She has her head sideways vomiting, and she's screaming like, I can feel it. I can feel it, whatever. They get the baby out, and they go like, Dad, come over here. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I don't know who that kid is. Like, I'm sitting next to her. They have the kid over on the side table now. And I'm like, no, I'm not going. But it's just like probably the opposite of what a lot of people would be thinking. But I'm like, no, she needs me here. Like, I want to be here for her, and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, Dad, come here. Kind of like, you need to get away from her right now, kind of a thing. Now, she doesn't remember most of that anyway. But I don't know if that was part of it, where I didn't feel this instant bond. Because he was a C-section, he was the cutest little friggin' perfect head-shaped baby.
Yeah, right.
I would say it was like the six-month mark. I'm like, I fucking love this kid. Yeah. Like, there was this point where it was almost like, as you get that bond with like eye contact or giggling and all these little things start showing a little personality. I'm super, super tight with them. I mean, in the relationship, it was, she's doing the stuff in the house. I'm always playing with them. I'm taking them out. I'm going out and doing things.
Yeah.
We got to a point, and there's, I think, some stuff, you know, going on with her where she just withdrew. But I was always very active, very involved at everything and all of that, but I was working a lot. It's weird. It's awesome. I love him. He's a cool kid. I'm excited to see him grow up. I like this age over the last couple of years. Like, I can have a legit catch with him. I was also the opposite of a lot of parents who are involved in fitness or athletics, where when he was 4 years old, people were like, oh, so what sports is he playing? And I'm like, none. Like, I'm not going to soccer I'm not going to soccer at 4 years old with all these has-been father athletes.
Yeah.
And these kids are just chasing a ball around, not learning anything. And I've seen enough students come through the school. I know how this stuff works. Now you have 9-year-olds that are single sport athletes.
Yeah.
They're feeling pressure from parents, from travel teams, that they're never going to make it on the high school team. And I'm fully aware that all that's bullshit.
Yeah.
So I wanted him to be able to move well. We did swimming. He was out of swimmies before he was 3 years old. That was important to me. And he did martial arts stuff, like this really great gym a friend of mine owns down the street. And it's like character development and just good workout. You're learning how to use your body. And he didn't get involved in sports until 9 years old.
Yeah.
So super late. And the other thing, I think the part of the benefit of him getting involved later was he just goes out for anything. I mean, he just went out for baseball for the first time this year at 11 years old.
Yeah.
And that sport ended up being, so far, that's the one where it's like, oh, wow, he is going to be good at this.
Yeah.
Where like these coaches they're not allowed to, they're calling up, hey, just, you know, we haven't heard this name before. And they're not supposed, this is Parks and Rec. And these coaches are calling, scouting. And we're like, yeah, this is his first year playing. We're like, well, that's kind of late. At this point, a lot of these kids are playing baseball year round. And he's doing a great job. We didn't even start having a legit catch until a year before that.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, and he's been firing it. So baseball, he's loving it. And then he just went out for wrestling, 12 years old, sixth grade, going out for wrestling. And I didn't have the balls to do that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I remember playing baseball, and when it got to kids pitch, I quit. Cause I remember seeing my older brother getting beamed with balls, and I was scared.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to see him, be brave in those ways, but it's like not even a thought. And I would like to think it has something to do with me instilling that a little bit in him, because I recognized that I was afraid, or I was too worried about what other people thought. And I'm like, dude, who cares what everything? Like, just do it, you know? Yeah. And now he initiates stuff and says he wants to go out for this or go out for that. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I'm doing a good job. How old's your kid now?
He's 6 weeks. So we've got a
okay.
Lot of ways.
So how's the sleep? Cause I got
sleep.
A pro tip.
So sleep is actually not, it's hasn't okay. been. So far
it's not as good as you think. It's not as good as you think. just a lot of people, like, you get used to some kind of routine. I don't know if it's, no, it's not too late. It's not too late. We started at 11 weeks and it changed our life.
What'd you do?
Changed our life. The book is called On Becoming Baby Wise.
Okay.
Very short, simple read. It's sleep training the kid. And the introduction, we're reading it and going, this is exactly what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Like, you would never deprive your kid of food.
Yeah.
You would never deprive your kid of hugs and kisses. You would never deprive them of, you know, a clean diaper. Why are you depriving them of sleep?
Yeah.
You can write it down on Becoming Baby Wise. If you look up Baby Wise, but we had this book somebody gave to us early on. We never read it. And in 11 weeks, we started it, and it's difficult, but absolutely game-changing. Okay. Game-changing. The little overview of it, you're putting them to bed, say, 8 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, you're feeding them, waking them up and feeding them. That's called the dream feed.
Okay.
The first night we did that, I'm petrified. I'm like, I'm going to wake him up right now. Oh, my God. But he gets that bottle or nipple in his mouth and is the quickest feed ever, because his eyes are closed, like he's not distracted. And then he slept through the night. Then it's the routine of wake, feed, play, nap. Wake, feed, play, nap. And it was like this perfect 2-hour rotation. He'd sleep for 2 hours, he'd be up and feed, and then he'd play, and he'd start getting cranky, and it was nap time. And you let them cry it out until they fall asleep. There's some little nuance to it. You know, you give them 15 minutes if he's still crying and screaming. Yeah. You check on them. Okay, everything's good, but don't pick them up.
Yeah.
Another 15 minutes, they fall asleep. If they're still crying after another 15 minutes, then you pick them up. You skip that, maybe nap. But absolutely game-changing. I remember taking him to a CrossFit gym and a martial arts gym when I was training at an MMA place. And he's in this little carry thing, whatever that thing's called. And he starts crying when I'm training at the gym. So he's like, you're going to get him? I'm like, nah, he'll be fine. Within 5 minutes, unconscious. He could sleep anywhere. We're watching a UFC fight at my house one night. The TV's up against the wall of his bedroom. Bunch of guys screaming, all this. Sleeps through the whole thing. And his attitude when he was awake was immaculate. And he napped till probably 5-6 years old. He would nap for hours. The sleep absolutely changed his attitude, his personality. Game changing. You prioritize sleep. And how similar is that to adults?
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, like, this is what I think about all the time. Like, adults are just, I mean, babies. I think there's manifestations of, nobody makes it out of high school. I think we talked about this with you and Aram. Rom. That's right. Rom.
Like R O M, like a ROM on a computer or whatever.
Yeah.
Rom.
But like, I think nobody makes it out of high school, meaning like the psychosocial issues that you have in high school continue to manifest until you like learn to navigate them. Right.
Yeah.
But I also just think from how you manage your energy and the need for play, like you're just a little kid. You just don't
realize, change.
Right.
Yep.
It's unacceptable for people to cry. It's unacceptable for people to like do certain things, but like, most of it's like, are you hungry? One of my buddies said this. He's like, they're going to tell you what they want, right? You're going to figure out their cries. It's usually, I'm hungry, I need to go to sleep, or somebody give me attention, right?
Yeah.
And humans do that stuff over and over again, right? So, but like, I mean, yeah, I'm going to check this out. And my wife, we like, it's okay. What we do is, nighttime is, or bedtime's around 8:30-ish. And like, I think what you're saying makes sense, because what happens is we wake up at about 1:30.
Yep. Right?
So
get ready for that to all be over.
Yeah.
The hardest part about that 10 o'clock feed was staying up for it.
Yeah.
Okay. For me, I'm like, oh God.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead though.
Then it's like five. Then he goes till about five. Right. Mm-hmm. And then my wife lets him sleep again. So like, you know, it's kind of one of those things. It's like, is it's six, one half dozen of the other, but like, you're right. If you can like extend that period where you give them the full, like they get like a legit 8 hours.
I mean, he would sleep till 6, 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But then, and then it's also get you out of that habit of like feeding them to go to sleep.
Yes.
Yeah. And you don't, and like driving them in a car to go to sleep. People start getting into these patterns. Like I got to do this to get them to go to sleep. And it's hard that first time. Like I couldn't look at the monitor. I could listen to him scream, but I'm looking at the monitor. I'm like, I can't look at his face. He's screaming like he's being murdered that first time we did it. The funny thing was, as soon as I opened the door, he stopped crying. Where before doing this, as soon as I'd go in the room, he would start crying more. Yeah. But that 15 minutes of him screaming, it was like, oh, okay, good. You're there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we'll check it out. And I mean, it's like, this is, it's always, I mean, dude, I was thinking about this yesterday. It's like, we're just so Pavlovian. And until you learn to manage your kind of the Pavlovian conditioning, like, like, so I, my brother gave me Masterclass, right? So like Masterclass is like, hey, you know, now it's kind of cool, you know, but it's also like, you got to be careful with like information consumption, because if you're just consuming information all the time and not actually implementing it, like you're just overwhelming yourself with stuff I should be implementing. Right.
Yeah.
And, but, I'm trying to just write more. I like to write. Enjoy, I also kind of like want to resist AI generated content, and I want to actually put out like human oriented thoughts. Right. So like shameless plug though, like I've just been trying to write consistently for the last, 10, I've written Jimmy. How do I say this?
You have written,
I have written.
Yes.
5,000 or 500 words a day for the past 10 days. Right. So
yeah. Are you writing? Are you doing like emails or something, or
it's honestly a blog. Right,
okay.
Right.
Are you publishing them anywhere, or just kind of right on your website?
I put it up on Medium.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah. So like, I don't know where this is. One of the big things with any of this, I don't know where it's gonna go.
It's great,
but
it's awesome.
If you enjoy doing it, and it can become part of something, like, you know, the cool thing about our age is like, if you're willing to put out your authentic self on a regular basis, like you can grow, like you can grow an audience. You can grow. Yeah. Like Aram, Aram's like been on fire lately with, you know, I think he's got a very, like a very clickbaity title, which is, is it 4 weeks to the beach? What is it?
Yeah. So 4 weeks to the beach. Remember when I first asked him, I was like, what's that about, dude?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever heard the explanation for it.
No.
So 4 weeks to the beach is the idea is that you are living in a place physically that if you needed, you're 4 weeks away from getting beach ready.
Yeah.
So you got an extra 5, 6 pounds, 7, 8 pounds, whatever. You get strict for 4 weeks and you can be beach ready.
Yeah.
Which versus the original thought of like, I'm gonna get you beach ready in 4 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which if you, and so that's the thing is like, so many people like they try to build like this, like, okay, so I'm a physical therapist. The amount of people who are like integrated physical therapy or performance physical therapy, which like performance is like relatively straightforward, right? But like there's no remembering like what that is, right? And integrated, like what the hell does that mean, right?
Yeah.
So it's like if
we just integrate all the aspects just together,
which is like super, you know.
Oh, okay, good. But that's what I was like, looking for.
Hey, so that the so good you can't, they can't ignore you, that Cal Newport book that I talked about, where it's like, and stop looking for your purpose or your passion, and go do meaningful work that you can get better at. Right. Yeah. And, I just always go back to like Jerry Seinfeld writing, like, he's like, how do you come up with enough material to do a bit? He's like, if I write a joke a day for 30 days, that's 30 jokes. And that's probably 10 to 15, maybe more of material. Right.
Yeah.
And so, and then you just start doing that and you just never break the chain. Right. And
well, I think too, it's so key is you're doing it, you don't know where it's going. Now change that to you now have an intention of where it's going. Like, this is what I want out of it. And then what happens when that doesn't happen, or it doesn't happen all of a sudden on the timeline? Because then you start getting impatient. Well, how come this hasn't happened yet? How come I'm not getting more whatever? And then you're discouraged from doing something that you actually enjoyed doing. And it's the same thing with weight loss, with getting shit, all of it. As soon as you start having some hardcore goal, which it's not bad to have a goal.
Yeah.
But if you're only focused on the goal and not enjoying anything about it or understanding how you're growing as an individual, going through a process of changing your body. Like, there's got to be a focus of how am I growing as an individual going through the process of changing my body? How am I growing as an individual writing? How am I growing as an individual with all these things? You know, like, you want to be the perfect parent. It's like, it could be such a, there's awful parents who neglect, abuse their kid, and they produce the most amazing child because the way that that child responded to that. And then there's these parents that on paper are the greatest parents, and they got the biggest piece of shit kid. It just makes you realize, like, you can't screw up. You can't screw up. You could not love your kid and treat him like shit, and the kid turns out fantastic. So just simply loving your kid, you know, people can get so hung up on, is this the right way? What's the best way to handle this? What's the best way to handle this? How should I do this? And it's like, no, just love on the kid, enjoy the process, and even just focus. How are you growing as an individual raising the kid?
I
that's it.
I think it's just like being as good. I mean, it's like what do humans need, right? Love, attention, you know, like some amount of validation, but like there's the problem with like our current culture is like people want to be validated for a mile so that they can take 2 inches worth of action, right? And it's
and there's a difference between validation and somebody in your life, spouse, somebody, you know, usually in that environment where there's like this love connection with the romantic love connection. It happens with friendships and things as well. But where that partner in your life is building you up, they see the greatness in you, they remind you of it. And like when they're reminding you of it and they're always seeing the greatness in you, that's what creates, especially I think from like a male female perspective, when the female is doing that with the male can then really come into their own and provide this safe place for the woman. It's like this cyclical thing where she's building you up. They want that safety. You want that build up, and it can just keep flowing, but there's difference. Like that's good in my perspective. And then the validation of, I need compliments from strangers.
Yes.
Which is what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Is not good.
I mean, and so much of it, like in the fitness or the nutrition space, which are hand in hand, it's like, if you're somebody that like wants to lose weight, but you're not willing to accept that like energy balance is a foundational principle that we must look at, like, it's hard. I mean, I'm almost like Aram and probably you too. Like, you guys got balls to like talk to like menopausal women who like feel like there's nothing they can do because their body is out of whack. And I'm like, we're not saying that. We're not saying that menopause doesn't suck, right? Yeah. But like at the end of the day, like, what are the variables that we can look at and, you know, manage? And if you're willing to look at it a little bit more objectively, you're typically going to get someplace better, right?
Well, it's acceptance. I mean, this is, I think, what most people struggle with is radical acceptance.
Yeah.
And I never read the book, but there's a book called Radical Acceptance.
It's behind me. It's back there.
I was in a position in life when somebody told me about the book, I go, I don't need to read it. I get it. Like, it downloaded in my head right away of like, radically accepting every aspect of your life. Because somebody told me about it when I was going through the divorce. And it's like, this is where I am.
Yeah.
Bitching about these symptoms and these issues is doing nothing. Complaining about this and that is doing nothing. This is where I am. What can I do about it?
Yeah.
And then you decide what level of doing things about it. Are you going to get on hormones? Are you not? How can you change your lifestyle to manage all these things? Radically accepting my body's not the same, and it's not going to be the same as what I was before I had kids, before I went through menopause, and you're not going to have the lifestyle that you have now and have this body of somebody else who's similar age, who's went through menopause and has this, you know, body that you envy. And then remember that there's somebody else, a friend of yours, that envies your body.
Yeah.
And you have somebody that you're envying. It's like just radically accepting exactly where you are, not where you were, not where you should be in every aspect of life. It makes it so much easier, and people I don't think do that well.
Well, because it requires you to I don't think it, when it's weird because it's like so many things are paradoxical, right? But like when you do that, you stop like asking life to just happen to you or for you, right? And life is always happening for you. I believe that. But like, you accept that you're going to have to learn the lessons along the way, right?
It happens for you because you believe it happens for you.
Yes.
Yeah. The people who don't, all they're noticing are all the obstacles that stop them from being where they could be.
Yeah.
Where the person who's like, no, life is happening for me, like, this was necessary for me to become who I am, to handle things in the future, you know, to not let people walk all over me, you know, because I think a lot of people are in that situation, you know, especially we see it with women who take the world on with their kids and take all the responsibility and don't ask for help and don't tell their spouse, I'm going to the fucking gym.
Yeah.
You don't have to say it like that. It's not going to be helpful. But to say like, I really need to prioritize.
If my wife said it to me like that, I'd be like, sweet. All right.
I know. Yeah. know your audience when you're speaking to your life partner in those situations. But to say like, I need help with this. I need time for me.
Yeah.
And if that person's not going to be supportive of it, if they're going to just talk about how busy their day is when they see that their partner is needing that, then that's a different conversation you have to have. But maybe people are afraid of that conversation, so they never bring it up.
Yeah.
I mean, there could go deep. There's levels to it.
Yeah. I mean, and like so much of it too is like, I think what happens is you have to make the intangible tangible. You have to make the unconscious or the unspoken more spoken on a regular basis, because I don't look at my kitchen the same way my wife looks at my kitchen, right? I don't look at the, like, I don't know if I ever like washed off dishes before putting them in the dishwasher, despite sometimes them not getting super clean, right?
Yeah.
But like, it like drove my wife nuts. And then over time, slowly, I have started to wash dishes, like put them.
I don't use a dishwasher. I hate them. I hate it. Dude, and ours broke years ago. And it was like, at a certain point, she's like, can we just get a new dishwasher? I'm like, fine, just understand, I will never unload it. I absolutely hate unloading a dishwasher. I'm like, I'll wash my dishes. I'll put it up there. If you want to use it, fine. Never ask me to unload. She was like, fine. And so never asked me to unload.
This is one of the things in 2020, I got really low. I talked to you guys I got really low. And like, what I realized is a lot of the monotonous tasks that you hate to do are actually really good opportunities for mindfulness meditation.
I felt that now living on my own.
Yeah, so like
these things that I never really did before, because she took care of it, because I took care of all the outside stuff. She took care of all the inside stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm loving vacuuming and mopping and cleaning, all the things I did when I was single, you know, 20 plus years ago. So,
Well, one of my buddies is like, he's a psychiatrist. He's a palliative care psychiatrist. So he's dealing with people like dying and in pain. And he's like, you know, my work was so cognitive, and I took a sabbatical, and I just was like, I was making deviled eggs, right? So I had to like, or I was cutting up the eggs to make deviled eggs. So I had to unpeel, and I had to do like 400. He was just helping
That's
a friend.
It's a lot of deviled eggs.
Yeah, and he's like helping a friend who's had a catering business, and he's like, first I was like, this is miserable, right? But then I like started to just pay attention and, you know, like just take it in. And it was like very freeing. Right.
It's
like,
Zen.
Yeah. And that's the power of like, like I
think it's up there. I have Zen of Running. That was a really good book. Yeah. Zen and the Art of Running. Okay. Really good book.
All right,
it's I'll like, go. Yeah. Like, it's too cold out to run.
Yeah.
And it's like, cold is not bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's raining out. I can't run. Well, you take a shower. How come you don't like water in this situation? It's our perception of it, but to be in Zen, the Art of Running. Yeah, yeah. There's like the Zen of motorcycle or something.
But so Zen,
anyway,
Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance is a really interesting read. Like,
it's like a similar weird stuff.
Like multiple diatribes of like these, like this guy has like a young, I got to read it again, because I read it when I was like 24. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? But
yeah.
I picked up some things, but I mean, yeah, that perspective, and then like that, well, let's go into this. Let's get like a little bit like tangible here. Cause a lot of what your coaching is focused on right now is like, not necessarily, it's like helping a lot of guys. I think it's mostly men. Is it oriented?
The groups that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The first one, it's been mostly women. I can see myself shifting and wanting to help men. This one, there's a larger percentage of men, smaller group. I charged more. It's been nice having a smaller group, because people can't disappear. Like in my first group, I capped it at 15. I had 15 people. And, you know, there's always like a third that just kind of stops showing up. And this is a much smaller group. And when somebody's not showing up, somebody else is like, yo, where you been? In the Telegram app where we communicate, we call each week. But go ahead. You were saying
It seems like it's about like some of the inner work, right? Some of the things that if you stay too superficial, right? Like, I mean, man, like why the hell do people lift weights, right? Is it to get chicks? Is it to look sexy? Is it to have a bigger butt? Well, what's that about, right? Yeah. Why do you need a bigger butt, right? Why do you want, like, I just talked, so I don't work with you for nutrition, but I talked to the girl I work with for nutrition before, and a lot of it was just like, it was right before we came on, and it's like, what, like, yeah, I want to make sure I'm fueling myself well. What the hell does that mean, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, actually, I want to be able to take my shirt off without second guessing it, right?
Yeah.
And then it's really like, okay, what's that about? It's because when I was a 7-year-old boy and I had to take my shirt off in front of girls, I was super self-conscious, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like when you start to peel back, this is what being a human actually is, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is why, you know, we talked about, I was just like, my mom is a super intelligent woman who like was a good mom, but like any job, she hated like all the jobs she had because she was just smarter than her bosses all the time.
Yeah.
And like more go-getting and right. And so she just hated the authoritarian, like being under somebody else, and it made her miserable. It made her every day blood pressure through the roof. Right.
Yeah.
And you don't know, she doesn't know that, but then your body starts to tell you. Right. Yeah. And so that's where, like, when you go through these layers, right, like, and you start to help people see their patterns. Like, yeah, I physically help people train better. But one of the most important things that I think I do is help them uncover their shit that is, like, making them either overwork or it's stopping them from working or it's clarifying what you want so that we can actually take steps towards it, right?
Yeah.
Like, yes, pain is tricky, but if you do those things, you're probably going to move in the right direction over time and you're going to feel a lot better. Right. And there is a component of like, if somebody has like a traumatic injury, you know, they tear their ACL, like we know that there's a high correlation between an injury like that and depression. Right. Well, no shit, because you can't do what you love doing. Right. Or you, and like, so it goes both ways. Like if you're depressed and you physically start to feel shitty, like, okay, how do we navigate that? Right.
Yeah.
But talk about like the group and talk about like some of that stuff.
Yeah, so it's been something I was thinking about over a year ago, and it all started with probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, somebody asking me, Sean Pastuch, asking me, like, you know, what are your values, kind of a thing. And I'm like, I don't know. And you just, health, you know, I don't know. And it started me going down that path, really looking into those things. And then that just ended up uncovering a whole other thing. Me seeing my subconscious patterns in my life showing up and looking into where are they coming from. And I had a good upbringing. I had good parents, but there were some things that I've unpacked where I didn't have like the loving mother.
Yeah.
You know? So then how does that translate into adult life? Are you seeking attention from females, you know? Yeah. And this is like, oh, this person, and that's like, you know, there's those, that's an example of a pattern. The way that we're eating, a lot of these things that people struggle with, exactly what you're talking about, go back to something.
Yeah.
I have a client now in the group. So we unpack, we figure out what people's values are. They do that. They figure out what their strengths are. They start, the hardest week is people writing down their self-limiting beliefs, which people, when they hear that, they don't really know what that is. And then when they're forced to do it and then dig into where those self-limiting beliefs come from and then reframe those self-limiting beliefs. I mean, I had a woman who's petrified of becoming a parent and she wants to have kids and she's, you know, with her boyfriend, like life commitment, you know, and I don't think they're not married. This was in the first group. And she just totally unpacked where all that came from. And the self-limiting belief of I'm not going to be a good mother because of her upbringing.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, where's the evidence of that in your life?
Yeah.
And then you have to start finding the evidence that is the opposite of that self-limiting belief. You know, some people, it's like, I can't stick with a workout program. Well, have you ever? Well, yeah, I did this 6 months. Okay, so you can stick with it.
Yeah.
You know, and finding evidence that all of these things that you tell yourself you can't do aren't real. You know, so that is a difficult couple weeks. And then I started doing the second group because the way it went, got into like the shadow work, which is a lot of self-limiting belief stuff. Where does our self-perspective come from? And a lot of people are just stuck in subconscious routines. You might have been hurt in a relationship and now you're sabotaging all future relationships. Yeah. You know, you're afraid to like fully commit to somebody because this, you know, because whatever. You're used to maybe acting a certain way with your family. There's somebody in the group now where they're having a difficult time standing up for themselves with their family. And her mother's been saying stuff to her entire life about her weight, you know, little comments like, how's everything going with the diet if she's eating a piece of bread?
Yeah.
It's fucked up. And now what does that person start doing? If you're telling a 12-year-old who's struggling with their weight, like, I think you've had enough. But once you grow up, nobody's going to fucking tell me I had enough. I'm going to eat as much as I want.
Yeah.
You know, then you start hiding food as a kid from your parent. What do you do as an adult? You're eating in secret, but then you're out in front of friends eating the salad, complaining how I just can't lose weight. I mean, I'm eating salads every day. I'm doing all this stuff, but then you're doing this secret self-sabotaging behavior. And then you're actually really hiding from yourself at this point without even realizing it. So unpacking all that stuff. And when you see where it actually comes from, it can be so freeing. I think once there's awareness to that situation, it creates a whole different dynamic in your brain. Yeah. And there's still work to do to get out of that. But at least the light was shined on it. And you're like, oh, so that is real. This has been something I've been dealing with. Like, why do I keep self-sabotage? Why do I keep doing it? Okay, it is that. And you know what? It's like, I am an adult. And this woman in the group, she shared how she snapped at her mom and and said something to her like, however she phrased it, of I don't need any comments from you, blah, blah, blah. And it's the first time she ever spoke up for herself. Yeah. And the next day, the mom came to her and was like teary-eyed and like, I'm so sorry. I just, because she always felt like she was being judged, not loved from her mom. And that creates a lot of hurt in somebody.
Yeah.
And the mom was like teary-eyed saying like, I never meant to. I just really want the best for you. I know like you're really trying and blah, blah, blah. And it was like this huge stepping stone and catalyst for, I think, the future of the relationship.
Yeah.
Well, and her looking at her mom as actually loving her instead of judging her.
Yeah.
And it's wild to see when these things start happening and people start standing up for themselves. And it's wild, creating boundaries that were causing a lot of problems for you because you didn't have them.
It's so crazy because like, I mean, this isn't as deep, but like, I mean, we had a kid, right? In the United States of America, finances are something that, I mean, everywhere, right? But like, you know, success and like financial independence are such like, it's a good thing, right? I'm not denying that, but like, it's another variable that I'm like, are we good, right? Are we on the right track? And like me, I will pay my bills. I never miss payments or anything like that. But I look at money and I'm like, I was just literally like hoarding it away, just like not utilizing it. And I invest and stuff. But like, I'm like, my wife's like, what do we need to talk about? I'm like, let's have a financial meeting. Like, and what would happen is every time we've, it's literally on the calendar, like on a regular basis, but I would just like put it off or we'd get started and I'd get so antsy. And so, but where that comes from is like, my parents, we worked and we utilized our money in like good ways, but I paid for my own college. But then there was this, I got done with college and it was like, shit, like, where's my money? Like, where's it going? And I just didn't know how to navigate it very well. So it's basically it was just like kind of, you know, you stop looking at your checking account, right? You stop and then you just don't spend. What I did, honestly, was I just didn't spend money. So then I didn't enjoy things. Right.
Yeah.
And my wife finally is like my wife's super objective. I also kind of have, and this is when one of the weird things about business is like, if you have a scarcity oriented mindset in business, you are just going to see all the ways that it's not going to work. Right.
Yeah.
So cultivating a little bit more abundance and also setting goals, whether those be financial or number of clients you serve or XYZ, is really powerful. And I get that. But my wife's just like, let's just lay it out and we'll talk about it. And doing that, creating that clarity, and like looking at the problem really objectively, which I have, I'm basically a doer and my wife's a planner, right? Yeah. You give me a task, I'll execute it, right? And I can get myself to do some things, right? But my wife's just like, my wife can plan the shit out of stuff, but doesn't execute. And I love my wife, right? But so that's, we're being a team and working on that. But dude, once we did that meeting on Sunday afternoon, I was on cloud nine. Because like, okay, we're okay. Like, and this is a plan, right? Yeah. And like, but what, on the deeper level, like what you're talking about is like, if you never have that conversation with your mom, your relationship just keeps getting worse.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas if you step into the conflict as an adult, because this is what happens with parents, right? They don't acknowledge that their kid's a 30-year-old person now. Right. And they still look at them like 16-year-old person. Like, I, again, using my wife as an
example. And then you still feel like that 16-year-old person until you step into your adulthood and you stand up for yourself and you say something.
Yes. Right.
And we always, it's crazy. I mean, I'm 45 years old and I'm recognizing how I'm still seeking approval from my parents on things.
Yes.
And even like politically, we're on two different sides of the coin, me and my mother. And I'm like, why do I get into these conversations with her?
Yeah.
And it's because I just want her to, like, I realized this, like, this was for the past 6 months. I realized, I'm like, it's all because I just want her to understand my perspective and not judge my perspective.
Yes.
And know that it's coming from a good place. Like, I'll talk about the vaccine. I didn't get it. She thought I was a scumbag for not getting it, all this stuff. And it was like, I'm coming from a place of, I care about people and I'm afraid of what it might do to them if they're a healthy person.
Yeah.
I had clients who were in hospitals, and I'm hearing stories that stuff's not on the news. I had clients who one woman, her brother, 35 years old, gets it, and he was a marathon runner and couldn't run again. And it's like, so I saw those things, it scared me. And I was like, I don't want to get it. I feel healthy. I feel safe. And I was viewed as being an awful human being.
Yeah.
And so that's just a small example, but it's like, but we did have a conversation. I go, you're wanting everybody to get it because you care about their health. I'm not wanting everybody to get it because I care about their health. Can we at least agree that we're coming from the same perspective of care, you know, for people? And we don't have to agree on the way that we're doing it, but, you know, whatever. But I'm like, I'll get these debates with her about whatever. It's simply, I'm looking for acceptance from her, even though I think differently. I'm like, why? I have to stop. Like, I know that she loves me. I don't have to earn her love. And I don't have to waste these conversations because all it does is cause more of a divide. And that's self-sabotaging behavior because it was something that was in my shadow, something I was unaware of, and thinking, we just butt heads. That's how we are.
Yeah. Butting of the heads without the clarity of the conversation, because like, you're going to disagree with people that are in your close circle, and just cutting them out, like, post-election, you know, you could just feel tension between people. It's like, we literally talk in our neighbors, or our political system and how we go about this is just so far from what it should be if we actually cared about, like, good governance. Yeah, it's literally a freaking show, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so, but what are being manipulated is, like, people's emotions. The only issues that we talk about are, frankly, issues that, like, are personal choice issues that, like, honestly, our government, we should probably make very overarching protective oriented things, and, like, then, you know, let individuals decide. I think that generally, right? But
there's like a celebration of cutting people out of your life if you voted differently.
Exactly.
That I've never seen before. And that's
makes me sad. And that, because I had a couple conversations with people like, hey, like, I gotta know, like, how you voted. And I love these people. I love them. Like, they're.
It's like, if you have to know, then I cannot let you know.
Yeah. And what I said is, like, me and you have interacted in this period of time. You know, like, what are you gonna do if I say I voted for the opposite side, right? Yeah. And they're like, it makes you think. Yeah. Yeah. If it's just me saying I voted the other way and I'm going to argue with you, then it doesn't do us any good, right?
Yeah. And it's so, like, just don't vote, and then you can stay friends with everybody. Does your vote matter?
I,
I,
do, I do generally subscribe to the George Carlin methodology of like,
yes, yeah, such, yeah.
Dude, it's just
if you did vote, you can't complain. People say if you didn't vote, you can't complain. No, actually, I can. You did vote and you guys made your decision. So again, you can't complain. That's hilarious. Right? It's hilarious. Right? Yeah, yeah.
George Carlin was freaking amazing. But and this is why we need comedians. This is why we need art. This is why we need music. That's not just trippy bullshit. Like that's just hype bullshit. That's all.
Yeah, yeah.
We need perspectives and things to make people think. Otherwise, they won't. Right.
And that's where, like, even right now, like this conversation, people, they have to at least do it on their own. If you have a coach like you who's asking questions that are a little bit deeper, people just, if you're complaining about the way things are going in your life and you're unwilling to answer the questions that you brought up,
yeah,
like, why this? Why do you want this? Why do you want this? And not just stop. I mean, you got to go at least five whys deep. I mean, there's literally a five whys strategy to that. And if it's like, why? Well, I just want to look good in the bathing suit. Why? Because I just do. That's all it's because I just do. If you're unwilling to go beyond that, then.
And you're unwilling to do the actual work to get there. Right.
Correct.
So
yeah. That's a double.
If you say I want to look good, you're like, cool, I'm doing all this stuff that you told me. Sweet. Right.
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah. But if you're complaining, it's not going your way. And then you're still not even willing to answer these questions. You know, like self-limiting belief questions. Why do you think you get? No, I know I can. I just go do it. Like just to confront yourself. I think it was Alan Watts. Like the greatest thing you can do with your life is based. However he phrased it, greatest thing you can do with your life is to discover yourself and work on yourself. You know, and I think a lot of people. I posted a while ago about it. People are living in a victim mind state without realizing it because they're living in a martyr mind state.
Yeah,
or state of mind. However, I just said that. And they're doing everything for everybody. What? I'm not a victim. Look at everything I'm doing. Look at everything I'm doing. I'm not a victim. Well, you're a martyr. You're killing yourself for everybody else. You're the hangman if you're into tarot card reading. So I think, people are victims without realizing it. If you're unwilling to ask those questions, figure out where some things come from and be even open to the fact that they do probably come from childhood stuff. Because I ignored that forever. I'm like, well, I can't complain about it. Like, why am I fucked up? Why do I have like these? Why was I so angry when I was younger? Why do I get so angry now? Why do I feel like I have to defend myself so much? Why do I feel like I have to prove myself so much? All these things like that went through. Why do I feel like I have to work so much? Like I've had a job since I was 9, 10 years old, delivering newspapers once a week. Then it was delivering every day. And then it was working at a snack bar when I was 12, working at Domino's when I was landscaping at 14, 15 at Domino's. My senior year of high school, I had 3 jobs. I've always had multiple jobs. I'm like, why am I working so hard? And then it's like, I realized like there's this guilt that wasn't given to me that I like took on. My dad busted his ass all growing up. He wasn't home Monday through Friday. And then now that he's in a place where we will be receiving something that's going to be very beneficial financially when they pass away, there's a guilt in that. Where I'm like, I don't want to live my life because I know that I'm going to get an inheritance that will take care of me. And then I also, you never know, maybe they keep living it up the way they're living it and there's not one. I have no idea, but there's a guilt. And I'm like, and I'm going to earn that or show my dad, like, look, I'm the hardworking one and all that. It's like, all my dad wants me to do is be happy. Yeah. He wants to see me be able to relax.
Yeah.
And I'm living in this world that I've created for myself. But how do we figure that out? Confront that stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like from a nervous system development and like your brain. I hate so many people like, oh, it's your nervous system. It's like, no, it's not. It's not your nervous system. It's freaking you. You are your right. But like your prefrontal cortex is where executive function happens. You know when it's developing? Adolescence. It's maturing finally. When you're 20 years old, 24, 25 years old, right? But like, so literally what's the regulator and the decision maker of your brain is being put through this frame of life where, you're trying to figure out what the world is like. You're trying to get back. Like, I mean, so much of like my youth was spent trying to get validation from girls that didn't like me. right?
Yeah.
I should have dated the girls that did like me. And I'm not saying that there was a lot of girls like that, but I should have just dated the girls that liked me. But yeah. I was trying to date the girls that were, you know, above
the ones that were going to elevate you, that were going to be like, look how cool I am that I got
yes.
her.
Yeah.
Instead of the girl that's actually going to internally elevate you
yes.
by telling you how awesome you are.
Yeah.
Like, we're fucked up.
Why? Yeah, right.
Like, that's,
yeah.
And that's like, the cycle that so many people will continue to stay in, even once they're married.
Yes.
And they're like looking, and you're like, you want to catch somebody's eye. You want somebody to give you this feeling like, oh, I could get her or this or that. And it's like, for what? Now you're taking something away from your spouse. You're taking away from even your ability to receive from them when you're looking anywhere.
Yes.
Like, even wrapping my head around things like biblical stuff of, you know, like if you're thinking it, if your eyes
yeah.
aren't even looking and you're like, you're just looking, it's yeah. not a big deal. But what that really does do, I mean, this is all things I'm learning and destined to not repeat in my life, because those things allowed me to distance myself from my wife, even though I didn't stray.
I mean,
created a divide.
All so much of the, like, the Bible, especially the Old Testament, dude, just is, I mean, I'm not trying to be offensive to anybody here, but hopefully, no, there's only gonna be 15 people who listen to this, but, like, it's just a self-help book. It was just the first self-help book that we could write down, and if you don't appeal to some type of God, nobody's gonna listen to it, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that there's not a ton of awesome value, and I'm like, I don't know shit. But, dude, it's crazy what the Stoics and the Bible.
Even like all the three major religions, they all have the same thing. They're still like a father, son. So I feel like for me, and I grew up, became a Christian when I was in high school, born again, very involved with a non-denominational Christian church through my mid to late 20s. And now I'm looking at going, this is just everybody trying to explain what they've realized about life.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, they all have the same similar principles.
Yeah.
The same stuff. So like what you just said, yeah, right on. Even New Testament, like teachings of Jesus, it's like, these are lessons. It's not all about him.
It's about you. Being a servant, right?
And yeah, like,
that's always what's wild. Is like,
I am what you say I am.
Yeah.
Like, even that phrase, I am what you say I am. We spend so much time trying to show people who we are, but I am what you say. You think I'm an asshole, Dave? I'm an asshole. You think I'm the greatest person in the world? I'm the greatest person in the world.
Yeah.
I am whatever you say I am, man. I don't have to explain or prove myself, because I am what you say I am.
Have you ever read The Courage to Be Disliked?
No, but I heard about it.
Joseph Adler. It's the psychology of Joseph Adler, right? And it's like, most people spend their whole lives trying to get the approval of people who are never going to give it to them, right? Yeah. So,
and even if you do, you're going to find another person who you're trying to give your approval to.
Because that's what so much of life is like, the grass is greener on the other side. And you know what? The grass is greener where you water the freaking grass. Right.
And then half the time you get over to the fence and you realize they spray painted their lawn.
Yeah. Right.
Ah, you like that one?
we're back to the hype bullshit, right? But
yeah.
And I'm going to let you go, because this has been great. But I appreciate having a conversation. It's like, this is what I wanted this podcast to be, which is me bullshitting with people I think are
cool,
right? The tactics of lifting and like, I love helping people with that type of stuff. But like, like, it ain't rocket science most of the time. There are some nitty gritty stuff, but like most of it, for most people, you can get great results if you show up consistently, if you get accountability, if you ask for help, if you keep doing it and you actually learn. This is one of the big things. Nutrition, lifting, you have to learn. Like, this is maybe the last thing. Like, if you don't learn the lesson, you are going to repeat it. And like, that's where I think like, you're a teacher. I actually wanted to be a teacher, and then I decided like, hey, do I want
to? But you are. You are now.
Yeah. And
you're just not dealing with the bureaucracy of public education. A bunch of asshole kids staring at you with blank faces going, what do I got to know for the test?
Yeah. That's the hard part. It's like, I mean, how do we bring about this sense of curiosity to people anymore? Like, cause it's
hard.
The apatheticness or the apathy is high. Right. So.
Yeah. It's hard. I want to say, like, with what you just said, what you wanted with the podcast, this is the direction I'm attempting to shift ours. I just want to hear people's story. Yeah. I don't need tips. You know, I don't think the audience even needs tips. I think you hear someone's story, you hear what they have to say, and this is evidence of what I said before, everything's inside of you. You hear and listen to somebody's story, you listen to the stuff they're saying, you are going to pull out from that what you needed.
Yep.
So we don't need the tips. We don't need the technique. There's plenty of people out there who are obsessed with that. And they can get into that. The answers are all inside of you. They are all inside of you. And you, as you listen to the story, you stop looking outside. So what's the best way? What's the best way? They're looking for the out. They're looking outside. All the answers are inside of you. You don't need the steps. You don't need the tips. You know, at a certain point, obviously, when you're new,
it's always nice to have steps, but like,
most of it
is like,
so, I'm talking for the people who are continuing in that repetitive cycle of not getting anywhere and being miserable and not following through with themselves, not keeping promises to themselves, constantly learning about things, but never executing, you know, it's like, you know, look for the answers. They're inside of you. So I agree with you. I think that, that kind of stuff is the most
where do people find you, Jimmy? Where do people find you?
Just Instagram, Jimmy Nutrition, @ Jimmy Nutrition on Instagram. OtherSideLifestyle.com is the coaching page or podcast page. You can get some merch on there. But yeah, otherwise just @ Jimmy Nutrition. That's
You do a very good job when you do the talking head reels. I do like you have good like delivery. You kind of have a stand up comedy like delivery. So
some of the older ones, like this summer going through becoming living on my own and everything. I was doing those where I was just walking about my day and talking.
Yeah,
it was like so different. I was scrolling back and I'm like, like before. Yeah, I'm definitely, it's exciting. Earlier in the year, I got asked what was like the most life-changing thing in my life. And I go, I don't think it's happened yet. I think it's going to be happening. And it's happening. And the lessons and things that I never thought I'd be learning about myself. So it's exciting in the direction I want to go with coaching. It's exciting. I still want to help people with nutrition and fitness and all that. But I love doing this group stuff. It's it's exciting.
Dude, there's a group conversations where if you get people who are can be in that space, man, like I used to work at, just really quick here, I used to work at like a rehab hospital for a little while, and like we would have to have group therapy sessions, right? And it's more like educational, right? But I would try to get into like the psychosocial and the emotional aspects of pain for some of these people in like a one-on-one like treatment session, and people's just eyes just glaze over, right? Yeah. But you get people in a group of 5 or 6 people and you start to, they'd be like, yeah, so like pain is actually kind of complicated, but it kind of makes it good because when you understand that, oh, like if I am, you know, noticing that my pain is greater on a day where the sun, it's cloudy and, you know, I don't have a whole lot going on socially. It's like, well, those things are actually kind of depressing your mood and your pain is going up as a way of like your body being like, hey, let's do something about this. Mm. People would click in that group setting because their walls come down because it's not a personal attack on them.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I think is really cool about like group stuff. And I think it's
a good thing. So. And it's so therapeutic for them to share those things in front of people because they're used to keeping it in.
Yeah.
And they're afraid to share with anybody. And then once they release it and say it to somebody, that what that does just by you saying it out loud to somebody, which is exactly what you're saying before about like showing up authentically, is therapeutic. Just showing up authentically, you know, I mean, because most people are, they're practicing living as somebody else.
They're trying to be something else. They're reinforcing this mismatch between their identity and who they want to be. And then,
That's what Jim Carrey. Have you ever heard Jim Carrey when he said the depressed thing that one of his counselors or friends told him, you're depressed. You need deep rest from this mask that you have been wearing and this avatar that you have been playing. And I'm like, holy shit, what a great line.
Well, and I also just think like, you know, we're animals, right? And like you can't outthink your way out of these cognitive problems, right? You have to experience life and then you have to make sense of it. But like, you know, I wrote a post, I think it was yesterday. It's like the blog was like, my dog gets depressed when she doesn't get to play and get to go play with the neighbor dogs and be with social. And when we're not giving her attention, because this has been a shift for my dog and I love my dog, but like, and I'm like, this post is not about my dog, right? It's about like the fact that if you give yourself the needs that you really have, which people just, they stop. we're getting into the deep weeds again, but like,
oh, I'll have a part two or something.
Yeah, no, we'll do part
it's,
two.
It's so true, because the you answer those questions, you figure out those things, but then there are action steps you have to take.
Yes.
People who are dealing with anxiety, your brain wants what it's getting. So every time you're stressing about something, your brain's like, oh, you like stressing about things. We'll yeah. give you more things to stress about. So that's where the steps come in, and the action takes place once there's the awareness. But at least there's that freedom with the awareness. But then there's the actions to remind the brain, like, no, I don't want that stuff, so I'm not going to engage in those activities anymore.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a thing. So yeah, it's wild. But yeah, let me know.
Hey, for part we'll two. Do it again. I do bring I like doing part two. So no, I appreciate you, man. I'll get this up in the not too distant future, and care of yourself.
Peace. Sounds good, man. Good seeing you.
Appreciate you. Peace.
All right. Thank you.